Hey, what you're about to listen to is the podcast version of what was a live radio segment on KPFA. Consequently, when you hear us give out a call-in number, you don't want to call it. If you're listening to this as a podcast, it is already too late, and nobody on the other end of that phone number is going to have any useful answers for you. All right, let's go to this week's Corona Calls. We're going to turn, as we do most weeks at this time, to new developments in the world of COVID-19 and the public health infrastructure that we used to rely on to get us through things like it. Our guest is Dr. John Swartzberg, Clinical Professor Emeritus of Infectious Diseases at UC Berkeley School of Public Health. Good morning, Dr. Swartzberg.
Good morning.
I wanted to take a minute. I was on vacation, but could not unglue my eyes from this news. I wanted to take a minute to go through the testimony that Secretary of Health and Human Services Robert F. Kennedy Jr. Gave to a bipartisan committee in the Senate yesterday, where he got raked over the coals, not just by Democrats, but by a number of Republicans who seem to care about things like mass death, and just kind of dug in. To give our listeners who didn't hear this in headlines at the end of last week, I'm just going to play a little bit of his exchange with Democrat Mark Warner from Virginia.
Do you accept the fact that a million Americans died from COVID?
I don't know how many died.
You're the Secretary of Health and Human Services. You don't have any idea how many Americans died from COVID?
I don't think anybody knows that because there was so much data chaos coming out of the CDC, and there was so many perverse incentives, and these are modeling
studies. You don't know the answer of how many Americans died from COVID. This is the Secretary of Health and Human Services. Do you think the vaccine did anything to prevent additional deaths?
You get the idea. It didn't go much better with him for Republican senators. Bill Cassidy from Louisiana, who is a doctor himself, asked Robert F. Kennedy Jr. if he still thought Donald Trump deserved a Nobel Prize for Operation Warp Speed, which developed the mRNA vaccines, and he said yes. The follow-up questions did not go too well for him. Dr. Swartzberg, what are you thinking as like a public health practitioner watching this unfold in the U.S. federal government?
Well, Brian, I started watching it and I listened to some of it and I just couldn't listen to all of it. It just disgusted me. And maybe disgusted is not the first emotion I had. The first emotion I had was it tremendously saddened me to see the degradation of the office of HHS by Kennedy and the destruction that he's already done, and then to listen to his prevarications on national TV and radio. It saddened me and disgusted me.
Earlier in this administration, I think we were working with the concern that his actions at the head of that agency and that of his appointees would just kind of create more doubt in the public's mind about the utility of vaccines. But now that's concerned, they're just actually going to make it harder to get them. The FDA has changed its guidance for the COVID vaccines and says no one under 65 should get one unless they have a medical condition unspecified in the guidance that puts them at higher risk for severe COVID. This is the most common thing people have been writing in to us about. What does this mean in terms of trying to get a COVID vaccine this fall for anyone who's under 65?
I don't know. I mean, what it means from a population standpoint is that whenever there's confusion about vaccination, people often opt not to get vaccinated. So it will decrease the number of people getting vaccinated just because they're confused. And then when you add on top of that logistical problems for getting vaccinated, we know from years of experience that fewer people will get vaccinated. Then when you add on top of that, that there may be a cost to it, you may be turned away at the pharmacy and so on. It's going to run the numbers down of people who get vaccinated. And we know the consequences of that. That is, people who aren't vaccinated up to date with it, particularly those who have underlying conditions, not just people over 65 or people younger than 65 with those underlying conditions, but very young children, We know that they are put at significant risk for hospitalization, intensive care unit admission, and death. So that's what we're going to see. And this is all self-inflicted, of course. This is the first year that there's been this confusion about a rollout of the vaccine. So the consequences of that will not be good for the American public or for, well, for the American public.
So now, because the vaccines already have FDA approval, they can be prescribed, I guess, off-label to people who are under 65 and don't have any other health complications, but needing a prescription to get a vaccine is very different logistically from being able to pop into a pharmacy while you're out running errands and just get a shot as part of a public health campaign.
Right. So this, in the last week, actually in the last just very few days, I talked to someone who went to CVS to get vaccinated, who was under 65 and in good health, and this person was turned away. I talked to somebody else who was under 65 and in good health, but who said, my husband has diabetes and I want to protect him from that. And initially she was turned away. And then she went to another CVS, the same company, and they gave it to her. And then I talked to somebody else who was under 65 who went and said, I'm healthy, but I want to get the vaccine. And they said, sure, but give us $250. Which is more than I think most places are charging. So that was just my experience in the last few days with people in our community trying to get the vaccine who are otherwise healthy. I haven't talked to anybody who's gone to their doctor yet to get a note, but that can be helpful. I've anecdotally heard of people who have done that successfully, but I've also heard of somebody doing that where a pharmacist said, no, I won't do it. So the idea of going to your pharmacy and not knowing whether your pharmacist is going to give you the vaccine or not is really disturbing. I'm not blaming the pharmacists at all. I'm blaming HHS and I'm blaming the CDC. And bottom line is I'm blaming Kennedy. And I guess the bottom line is I'm blaming the entire administration for creating something like this. This is just absolutely absurd.
From the position of a doctor or a pharmacist, does the new FDA guidance create new risks for giving the vaccine to someone under 65? Does it open up new litigation risks?
Well, certainly pharmacists are concerned about that. Pharmacists, like other healthcare professionals, have a license, and the license carries requirements. So I understand with that confusion, some of them react one way and some react another way. I don't think we should blame the pharmacists for this at all. A lot of this confusion hopefully is going to be eliminated, not by Kennedy and the CDC, but by states. And we saw this last week with the alliance between California, Oregon, and Washington. One of the reasons for this is to clarify the laws in these states regarding what pharmacists can and can't do. Right now, there's confusion about that because there is a law in California state books that says that pharmacists can only administer vaccines that have been recommended by ACIP, the advisory committee to the CDC, and the CDC. The ACIP has not even met yet to discuss the COVID vaccine. They're supposed to meet on August 18th. Whether they will or not, I don't know. So you can see where pharmacists are really confused about this, as well as doctors.
So states, right, it's usually state boards that credential pharmacists. So they have like control over that part of the situation. And states also regulate insurers. So presumably they could mandate that any health insurance company operating within their boundaries cover the cost of these preventive vaccines.
That's right. New York State, I think it was on Thursday or Friday, removed obstacles for pharmacists giving the vaccine to patients. They also removed some other obstacles. I think we'll see over the next week or 2 weeks or 3 weeks, sometime this month, California, Oregon, and Washington, also probably Hawaii, also making modifications with a lot of the requirements for the vaccines. So essentially what these states are doing, and other states, by the way, Colorado's in that list, and so is Maine, and I think another state as well, and Massachusetts. I think what we'll see is that the states are saying, and they've actually overtly said, that tragically, we can no longer trust what comes out of the CDC. And so we're going to have to give our state citizens the best information that science can give us and make policy around that, because we cannot count on the federal government to do that. Brian, I've been an infectious disease specialist for 50 years. I never in my life thought I would state that we cannot trust the CDC, we cannot trust ACIP, we cannot trust the FDA, et cetera. I never thought I would say that.
At this point, we should probably invite questioners from our listeners. Questions from our listeners. The phone number is 1-800-958-9008 to put a question to Dr. John Swartzberg. He is Clinical Professor Emeritus of Infectious Diseases at UC Berkeley School of Public Health. Again, that's 1-800-958-9008 for your corona calls. And while we sort through the people on the phone lines, Dr. Swartzberg will take our first question from the inbox. A person who did not sign their name at the bottom wrote in to ask, given that Florida has now ended, or I think is now ending, they've announced they're doing it, I don't know if they've completed it, given that Florida has now ended all childhood vaccine requirements, how long it might it take for polio to come back there?
Yes, Florida has a Surgeon General who has a very distorted view of science and a very distorted view of how people best can keep themselves healthy. That's the kindest I can say about Joseph Lodapo. In my class that I've taught on vaccine hesitancy and resistance, he is, I haven't talked about him quite as much as I did about Kennedy, but certainly over the years, I've mentioned him quite often for these reasons I was just mentioning. And he's the one who made this proposal that the mandates for school vaccination will be removed. And he equated this to slavery, mandates for vaccination to slavery. The consequences of this will be real. How long will it take? Well, there's a cohort that are already vaccinated, so it's not going to be an explosion. Hopefully, could be, but hopefully not, because we'll still have a lot of people vaccinated. But we know that fewer and fewer people will be vaccinated going to schools. And we know that we'll see more cases, and these cases will build on each other. How do we know this? Because we know other states in the past that did not have vaccine mandates, and we saw the consequences of that. Note that California is the largest state population-wise in the union. And although we had a few cases of measles here, very few. Note that a state like Texas that does not put a lot of effort into immunizing their children in terms of public health-wise, we saw an explosion of cases. It's sort of an easy calculus to make. We will see more cases, unlikely to be an explosion of cases, but we will likely see more and more cases build on each other year after year if this is passed. Now, Lodapo cannot make eliminate the mandates in Florida. The their state senate, their legislature is the only place that can do that. Unfortunately, their governor, DeSantis, is supporting Lodapo, so it probably will pass.
And I guess this question was about polio. I think that is an iconically terrifying disease that lived large in the imagination of people who grew up before the vaccine was available. But probably you would see outbreaks of other vaccine preventable diseases first, just because they're more inherently transmissible. My understanding is measles is like the most transmissible thing known to humankind.
That's right. Measles will probably be the first, if not pertussis, whooping cough. We've had around 20,000 cases of whooping cough and more deaths than we've seen in close to two decades now. So those will likely be more apparent. But polio is very contagious. But fortunately, the vast majority of unvaccinated people who get exposed to polio don't get paralytic disease. So it'll take longer to start to see paralytic disease, which is really the tip of the iceberg of polio infection. Whereas measles is, if you're not immune to measles, you're going to get it and you're going to get sick from it. So polio we will see, and the consequences of polio, everybody should know how tragic they are.
All right, let's go to the phone lines, which have filled up. Meredith is first up in Clayton, California. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for your show. I have two vulnerable parents. They're in their late 70s, and I want to get them vaccinated. I just got my mom the old COVID booster. As soon as it becomes available at their pharmacy, I am going to get my father the updated COVID booster, but I'm wondering how long I need to wait until I get my mother her updated COVID booster, because she just had hers 2 weeks ago.
Dr. Schwartzberg?
Thanks, Meredith, for that question. It's a really important one. I appreciate your efforts to protect your parents. The good news in regards to your mother who got the, quote, old COVID booster, that's the one that became available just about a year ago. The good news about that is it should be very effective against the currently circulating subvariants of COVID. So she will get good protection from that. Whether or not your dad, when he gets the new one, will have better protection, we just don't know yet. But it looks like from all of the data that we have, that both of these vaccines should offer good protection. In terms of when can he get that, as soon as it's available, depending upon when his last vaccine was. So if it's been more than 6 months, I would get him vaccinated. We're seeing a lot of COVID right now, and you'll want him protected as soon as possible. If it's been 4 months, ask him to be careful and in terms of exposure, and wait until you can get the new vaccine, which really should be available in the pharmacies now. I know they've shipped, and as I was mentioning earlier in the show, I know that they're available here in the Bay Area. So you might have to shop around for that, but it should be available to your dad now.
So she was asking about her mother, who just got the so-called old vaccine 2 weeks ago. I know 6 months is like an ideal interval, but 4 months from 2 weeks ago would be right before the holidays, which is a time when there seems to be a seasonal increase in transmission. And there's certainly a lot more holiday gatherings at which people run the risk of exposure. Would a 4 month interval work if she expected her mom to be at higher risk during that period?
Yeah, a 4 month interval works. People have in their minds that you have to wait 6 months for it to work. That's not true. It will work if you give a booster at 2 months or 3 months or 4 months. It just may not give as good a boost as it would if you wait a little longer. But 4 months, the difference between a response to the vaccine at 4 months and 6 months is not terribly significant. So again, I would base it on availability of the vaccine and base it upon when I guess it's her dad, got his last vaccination. So if he's at 4 months and the vaccine's available, that would be absolutely fine.
All right. Good luck with that, Meredith. Next, we'll go to Cherryland, where Michael is on the line. Good morning, Michael.
Hi, good morning, and thank you again for this call. I'm sorry that we didn't hear you guys a week ago, but I just wanted to make a minor correction to the statement that was made about how Kaiser is giving out tests to folks if they have Kaiser. They're not free, and it depends on your age and whether you're also hooked up with Medicare as to whether you actually can get them for free. And I know that it's still possible to get them. However, there is still cost efficacy, which I think should be made available for free to us elders that really can't afford it anymore. And that's just one part of it. But anyway, one question I had too was the looking at the downstream monitoring of the effluent that goes through our water treatment plants. And I'm just noticing I made some calls to Oraloma, which is my guardian, and they do not have somebody on staff, a chemist, to monitor the effluent as it goes out to find out what the, where these antigens are showing up or whatever they call them, to tell us, what really is going on with the rise and fall of these epidemics. I'm still calling it an epidemic because I think we're really not out of it yet. But I'm just wondering Dr. if there's Swartz. A way of getting that done or getting that in place.
Yeah, Dr. Swartzberg, what are you seeing in the sewage levels? That's what effluent is a fancy word for.
Right. What we're seeing in the sewage level is a high amount, not a real high amount, but a high amount of the virus's RNA. So that gives us an approximation for how much COVID is in the community. As Michael points out, it's not like every water treatment area is monitored. We monitor selected ones because we just don't have the resources to monitor more aggressively. So we monitor selected ones and then put them all together and make statements about the Bay Area or Northern California versus Southern California. So it just gives us a very general idea. I think what we can take away from that is that there's a lot of COVID in the area. And the area for Michael might be, he might not know in his immediate area, but it would be a much larger area. So I look forward to the day when we have the resources to monitor carefully smaller and smaller communities with wastewater, because it's a very good tool.
Dr. Swartzberg, is there any risk with that data that the amount of virus in the sewage does not actually correspond to the number of people infected, that say a new variant of the virus might cause people to shed relatively more virus in their poop per person, or that as people become more immune through prior infection and vaccination, they might shed less during an infection?
Absolutely. The virus, all we can really glean from this is that there is a rough correlation between the amount of RNA from the virus that we see in the effluent and how much COVID is going around in the community. But it's a very rough estimate, but it's really good because it tells us, actually, it's our earliest warning system. We start to see a lot of increasing amount of viral RNA in the water, and then we start to see more cases going to the emergency room and so on. So it's a very good early warning system, but it's not fine-tuned. And it really probably can't be fine-tuned.
So it would be not a great use of the data to look at the chart over time and say, this tells us that this particular surge is worse than 1 3 years ago. But it would be a good use of the data to just kind of look at the slope of the trend line presently and say, we're going into a surge, or conversely, we're coming out of one.
That's right. Well, there was a paper very recently that was able to show a correlation with how many cases you're seeing and how much RNA is in the effluent. So there's a general correlation, but I think general is all we can say.
All right. Dr. Swartzberg, we will leave it there for this week. Apologies to everyone stuck on the phone lines. Thank you so much for spending another Monday morning with us.
You're welcome. Thank you.
All right, that does it for this week's edition of Corona Calls. If you want to send in a question for next week's, you can email coronacalls@kpfa.org. Or tune in live to Call In Live. Usually we air Monday mornings right after 7:30 news headlines on KPFA 94.1 FM in the Bay Area or kpfa.org anywhere in the world. We put a little bit of extra work into repackaging this live segment as a podcast because it feels like the information is useful to a lot of people. We ought to make it accessible through as many channels as possible. You can help us get the word out by rating and reviewing it in whatever app you're using to listen. And if you want to pitch in some cash, we wouldn't say no. We always take donations at kpfa.org. I appreciate it if you mentioned Corona Calls when you make your pledge. My name is Brian Edwards-Tiegert. I hope you have a great week. Stay well. We'll talk to you next time.